All right. A special welcome to Rabbi Karlap. It's nice to have you with us. Welcome. Baruch haba b'shem Hashem. There's one line the Mishnah Berurah has at the end of Hilchot Tanit. He says, he quotes from the Magen Avraham. He says, Gam noagim letanot chafsivan v'chumachot polen nara naru fashte. The minag is to fast in the kingdom of Poland on the 20th day of Sivan, every makom, every place according to its minag. And today is the 20th of Sivan. So it means that today is Tanis Chav Sivan. So it relates to the events, the cataclysmic events that took place in the 17th century, known as the Gzerot Tach V'Tat. Gzerot Tach V'Tat, the persecutions of 1648-1649. And the Magen Avraham lived through those events, and his own parents were murdered through them. So he writes very briefly, but I'll go over some of the events. I go over this each year. We'll try to add a drop, and we'll take it from there. It's not just for Ashkenazim, though, but it means if your ancestry goes back to Eastern Europe, and I think many people here, that is the case. Most Ashkenazim are that way. So most likely, 300 years ago, you know, in your ancestor shul, they'd be saying Vayichal, they'd be fasting, saying Slichos. Now, with the passage of years, some of it has gotten diluted, unfortunately. We generally think of Poland as sort of a bit player on the world stage, but in the 17th century, Poland was one of the largest countries in the world. It extended from the Baltic to the Black Sea, a very large country, and it encompasses what we today call Poland, White Russia, Lithuania, Ukraine, all that was included in Poland. And the Jews were highly aligned with the Polish government, and they were frequently the tax collectors. And then in 1648, there was an uprising, a combination of Cossacks and Tartars rebelled against the Poles. So the Cossacks were Eastern Orthodox, the Poles were Catholics. The Cossacks were Eastern Orthodox, and the Tartars were an Asian group, you know, centered in Crimea. And there was just such a bloodbath that took place. They don't know exactly how many Jews were killed. Wherever they went, they killed Jews. But they estimate it could be 100,000 Jews were killed, 300 Jewish communities were destroyed. And Roy Wine writes, at the time, the total world Jewish population was, they estimate, 3.5 million, but the number of Jews in Eastern Europe was 1.3 million. So if you say 100,000 Jews, it's like, you know, approaching, you know, 10% of the population. It was, and they were killed under very gruesome circumstances. There is different accounts. There's one known as Yevain Mitzula Myri Bag by Rav Natan of Hanover, and the Shach wrote Megillat Eifa. They say the Jews were skinned alive, their flesh was thrown to the dogs, some had limbs chopped off, you know, they turned their skin into sandals. A lot of these things, there's a historian, I think Raoul Hilberg, he says, like, the Nazis were not innovators in what they did to the Jews, except with the concentration camps. Everything else had taken place in history before. So the Jewish stars, the segregation, everything else had taken place. A lot of what the Nazis did is, like, borrowed from these events. And the rebellion was led by an individual, Bogdan Chmelnitsky, Yimach Shemo, and they have in the Ukraine today, till this day, to the best of my knowledge, they have a statue of him in Kiev. He's like their George Washington. He's like their hero. But now there's a Jewish leader in Ukraine, but still, that's what they have. I think Rabbi Wein writes that they have nothing, or they didn't have so much for Babi Yar, but that they got. They got the statue of Chmelnitsky there. They got. So then many Jews were killed. Other Jews were, if they were captured by the Tartars, they were sold as slaves. That was the better situation. They were brought to communities in Rome, Bologna, Venice, Padua, Casablanca, Salonika. So here's the Sephardic input into this. So a lot of the Sephardic communities, you know, dug into their pockets and did Pidyon Shvuyim, which is a real tremendous mitzvah and a big chesed. The many Gedolim were, many of them were offered to spare their lives if they would convert to Christianity. And in the overwhelmingly majority, they did not do that, and they died as a result. It impacted many of the Gedolim. The Rebbe Reb Heschel was impacted. The Shach, the Taz, the Shari Ephraim, all impacted by it. But one of the elements that comes in now, during the course of the events, there was one event that took place in the city of Nemirov. In Nemirov, the Cossacks pretended they were the Poles. They brought up like a Polish flag, and they induced the people in the city to open up the gates. And then they opened up the gates, and then there was a bloodbath there. So 6,000 Jews were killed on that day. So when things calmly settled down, eventually things settled down. So the Vada or Bar Ratzot, the Council of Four Lands, was the rabbinic authority at that time, and it was a high level of Jewish autonomy. The Vada or Bar Ratzot was the greatest level of Jewish autonomy in the Galut. They had their own courts, their own taxing system, and they were led by Gedolei Torah. So the Vada or Bar Ratzot decreed that the 20th day of Sivan should be a fast for them and their progeny in perpetuity, that everybody should fast because of the events that had taken place. So the date was chosen for several reasons. First, it's the date that the incident took place in Nimarov. That's one event. Then secondly, there was a Tanis from the time of the Rishonim on the same date. I didn't go through all the facts with that, but there was a pre-existing Tanis. In addition to which, Chaf Sivan never falls out on Shabbos. It's never on a Shabbos. So all of those elements militated towards declaring the fast day to be on Chaf Sivan. Now, there are different elements with this. First, it showed like the importance of the Shulchan Aruch. Shulchan Aruch, had been written in the 1560s, so not quite 100 years before, and there was a big controversy, about whether the Shulchan Aruch was good or bad. Like the Maharshal, he opposed the Shulchan Aruch. He felt, among other reasons, that the Mechaber, he felt, didn't give adequate weight to the Balei Tosfot, and he felt that, like a person's paskening, he should look in the Gemara to paskin, not, go to a work. But the Shulchan Aruch proved its value because there was such a tumult, so people need to know the halakha, like they don't have the Rabbanim in the place, everything is like, topsy-turvy, so the Shulchan Aruch really proved its value at that point in time. But, when these events occur, al pi halakha, a person should be mistakel, and should be ma'ayin, and do a cheshbon nefesh as to why these events occur. And even though we're removed in time from the events, it's at least at the minimum we could remember the date. I certainly think if somebody has a wedding, you go to the caterer and says, "I have an opening today." I mean, I don't think this is the day to pick for a wedding. A person should be cognizant of the date, cognizant of the date, and it's the idea for introspection and for tshuva. All right, now I just want to conclude one idea. This is from the OAV Israel, the Abdur Rebbe. It's called quotingly Kutei Maharich. And I think I'll connect it with what we said before. He has a connection to Chaf Sivan in the Torah. He has a connection to Chaf Sivan in the Torah. But he doesn't explicitly say it's related to the events in Chaf Sivan, but I think you could easily join it. He says that Chaf Sivan is the beginning of the preparation for Yom Kippur. Chaf Sivan is the beginning of the preparation for Yom Kippur. That's quite a ways off, like 3.5 months away. But it's the Chaf Sivan, but it fits in well. He says, why? Because there's a remez, Ki Yad Al Kes Kaf. At the end of Parshas Amalek, so Amalek is our battle with our enemy, the enemy that's trying to destroy us. So it says, Ki Yad Al Kes Ka, the hand of Hashem is lifted up in a Shvua, Al Kes Ka. Kes Kaf Samech is like the throne of Hashem. Ka, Yud and then a Hey. So he says, Chaf Samech is Chaf Sivan. That's what he says. Kes is Chaf Sivan. And then Ka, Yud K, is Yom Kippur. That's what that he feels, that both of those things are connected. So you can easily connect it in saying that, every fast is a time for Cheshbon and Nefesh, but, a person could think about these ideas and try to, get the act together, heading towards Yom Kippurim. All right, any questions, comments, or thoughts on anything we did? Okay, that's it. Rabbi Chananel ben Kashmir, Sparkle, 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 Sparkle